Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/FTSW. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Welcome to Air Temple Island, the new home.
I'm the Avatar. You gotta chill with it.
You're the Avatar, and I'm an idiot.
You're a firebender. Boil it yourself.
Go away, Mako.
Don't worry. I will protect you, my feeble turtle duck.
I will make no such promises.
Bolin's got some moves, huh?
You amuse me. I will make you mine.
You shall meet again soon, beautiful woman.
I can't wait to get started. Yes! Finally!
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and the Legend of Korra podcast for DongBuFang.net. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Mel.
Hello.
Allie.
Hi.
Britt.
Hola, ¿cómo estás?
And Jeff.
Aloha.
In English.
Yes, it's today we'll be discussing episodes 4 and 5 of Book 3 of Korra, In Harm's Way and The Metal Clan.
In English.
We will be discussing in English, and the episodes were in English.
English.
What?
In English.
Great. These were two great episodes, very excited to discuss them, a lot to talk about. We have some news to get to first, more info on all the podcast stuff at the end of the podcast. Next week, two more episodes of Korra, 8 to 9 p.m. Fridays. We'll have a podcast up Friday night around midnight, so look for it then, maybe a little later than that.
That's technically Saturday, but...
Technically Saturday, great. No video podcast next week, just audio. Great. Thumbs up, let's go.
See my face.
Thumbs up.
Yeah, eventually we will, though, Mel.
No.
news this week, not that much. The Korra Comic Con panel has been announced. It's on Friday, 2 weeks from now. And that's not very helpful if you're listening to this later, but it's the Friday of Comic Con.
If you're listening to this a month later, it's at
11:15 Pacific. And they're going to be showing an episode, but the problem is we're in the middle of Book 3, so it's probably just the episode that's going to air that night. So that's great. That's kind of pointless. And it's good because
there's like not much they can do though.
There's not much. Really, there's nothing. If you're gonna show an episode, it has to be the one that they're airing that night.
No, it doesn't.
You can't
get it 4 hours early. So yippee.
You can't show at a finale episode.
You can. It would just be messed up.
It would be. They're not gonna do it.
You don't know.
I think what they should do is give concept art on book four, but we'll see.
That would be nice.
Yeah. All the voice actors are going to be there. Not all, but, you know, like most. Brian and Mike, and I think that's it.
Who says Brian and Mike?
He refuses to say Brake.
I don't say Brake, so. It's Mike and Brian. I don't know why I said it like that.
Brian and Mike.
Yeah, it sounds weird.
He's trying for an alphabetical mode now.
Yeah, only alphabetical.
It's Mike and Brian. It's always been Mike and Brian.
The other Korra news was that no Emmy nomination for Korra.
Rise.
Which was kind of expected. They nominated the book 2 finale and not Beginnings, which was dumb. I don't know who made that decision. We discussed that earlier on earlier podcasts, but...
Yes, we did. For a long time.
Yeah. Anyways, no Emmy nominations.
Are we also going to talk about what was found out on Nick's site, like the HTML hidden?
I mean, yeah, we can discuss that. I mean, I don't know if that's really big news. Apparently there's a tag in the recent video called Meet the Villains. That went up on Nick.com, where it said the villain group was called Red Lotus. I assume this is going to have some spoiler meaning, but we don't know the meaning, so I don't think it's spoilers.
It's not spoilers.
Well, it makes sense because Zahir said the end of the White Lotus, so you know if they're like an opposing group, you know.
Something to do with flower symbolism. So.
Hooray.
Are we going to talk about that, or...
I mean, what do you think Red Lotus means?
Well, I mean, I feel like, because we were talking about it earlier, it might be kind of like that schism. Well, this is kind of spoilers for Series of Unfortunate Events, but if you haven't read that by now, then. But, like, the schism thing that happened in there, where you've got two opposing branches of the same organization. Kind of working against each other.
Branching off of the White Lotus. Yeah, I could see that.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
That would be very cool.
That sounds like, Jeff, you have any thoughts?
Yeah, it sounds like awesome. Like, if there was a... I'm just hung up on, like, why... I guess we'll talk about it later. Anyways, no. All right, no thoughts.
Okay. As we discuss the villain stuff that happens this week, I'm sure we'll get more into it. Yeah, I mean, let's get into the episodes. I apologize if we don't discuss episode 4 that much, which we're about to discuss, but I really want to spend a lot of time on episode 5 and also keep this podcast 90 minutes, so we'll see.
Famous last words.
Okay, In Harm's Way, episode 4, the resolution of the Bossing Say 2 episode arc. What did you think? Let's start with Mel.
See, here's my thing. I don't like the way... This has nothing to do with the episode, but I don't like the way they broke up the episodes that go together.
So that was Nick's fault. That's nothing.
Yeah, so that's not the episode's fault. And for that reason, I guess it kind of is jolting. I mean, it was good. It was definitely not nearly as good as the one after it. I actually like the way Bossing Say is basically eternally like a crap hole of great things that are happening. But I liked the direction. I thought some of the stuff was a little over-the-top kiddish and cartoony, like the queen and all that stuff. But for the most part, the core of the episode and the core of the story I really liked.
Okay. Allie, what'd you think?
I mean, I liked it, but what Mel was saying about Nick breaking up the episodes, I know it like wasn't... I mean, it was Nick's fault, but I mean, because they did it that way, it was kind of... I don't want to say boring, but I feel like if it went with the other episode, it would have been better, at least for, like, grabbing my attention. But, I mean, I did like it. I was interested in the story this time. Like, at least with that, I, like, cared what was going on. Like, in episode 3, I didn't really care what was happening. But I liked it. I really liked the ending, so that was good. And I like to see how Bossing Say really hasn't changed for the better. Oh, well, I don't like to see that, but it's interesting to see how it, like, kind of got worse after Aang. But I liked it.
Britt.
I liked it. I liked definitely the second half of the episode more than probably the first half. I liked the queen more in English. And
in English.
I saw like this one theory on Tumblr where she's like, she hates animals because her father loved a bear more than she did than her. Yeah. I was like, that explains a lot.
Yeah.
And the Kai stuff was cool. I liked going back and seeing how Lake Laogai is essentially filled with water now. So we will be going back, but it like showed that we're going to go back this season backwards, like in places, but we're also not going to go backwards. And I liked Jinora's spirit bending spirit projection. I'm going to call it spirit bending. Spirit bending of herself, and yeah, that's pretty good. I liked the fight scene at the end where they're all like running and then Appa swoops down to catch them.
Yes, that is what happened in the episode.
That was pretty cool.
It's
well,
Ubi,
you know,
yeah.
It's, oh my god,
anyway,
it's not
anyway, thanks. Jeff, what do you think?
What did I think? I thought the Dai Li probably should have put up more of a fight, honestly, but whatever. And shoot, there was another thing. Not convinced that Kai has experienced a change of heart.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still wary of him.
I think it's ambiguous.
Yeah.
It's
just, he basically said, sorry for all that crap put
sorry.
You through. Yeah.
Were you, we'll get to this, I guess. But did you like it overall?
Overall, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Also, another thing that's cool is, like, I'm struck by the, moral ambiguity of, like, because Bumi pointed out it's perfectly legal for the Earth Queen to conscript soldiers. Like, you know, everything she's doing is legal. It might be nice, but, you know.
Not everything.
So it's interesting because the Avatar has now, like, officially interfered in her politics in a totally unlawful way. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah,
this was a very Korra hot-headed approach to the problem. Take it head-on. And it's going to have definite ramifications. Like, it seems everyone around her is just deferring to her so much at this point. That because she just is so completely powerful after last season, it seems like, and maybe they shouldn't be because this seemed like a bad decision handling it this way. It's going to have serious ramifications later this season.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was a very solid episode. Not too much stood out. I think it was just good start to finish, nothing bad. I thought the fight scenes were very good. I like the Jin Kai, Jinora, and Kai stuff, and the biggest thing to discuss is Jinora's astral projection, which we'll talk about. But other than that, not that much stood out. It's kind of a ho-hum episode, which is, I don't like the Nick is breaking up arcs, obviously, but I kind of like that this was the first, and then, like, the more interesting episode to me is the second one. Because if they broke it up normally, we'd be, like, freaking out over episode 6 when to me, episode 5 really needs to be discussed on its own. So I don't know.
Yeah, I agree.
But anyway, for the record, if you are not aware of why we're mentioning Spanish a lot, it's because episode 3-6 leaked in Spanish. We'll not be discussing episode 6 spoilers here. But yeah, we've seen these. We've had time to think about these because we saw them like a month ago. Anyway.
Some of us have.
Except Jeff, yes. Anyway, the first thing I want to talk about is the Earth Queen resolution. And we were just kind of talking about this, that what she's doing is legal, says Bumi. And I think the show moves on from it pretty fast because the characters don't understand what they've done. But I actually think this is going to be, now that I think about it a lot, I think this is going to be the main plot of the season, really. Mm-hmm. This seemingly will start some sort of war or major conflict with the Earth Kingdom and maybe the new Air Nation, which would be...
And possibly the Republic City.
And Republic City, too, because the Earth Queen was in episode 3, the Earth Queen was talking about how she's upset about the United Republic taking her land. So we have all of that. Maybe United Republic plus Air Nation versus the Earth Nation.
Damn.
Not that we want more wars, Allie, because the last
World
war...
World War! Well, I guess we won't for that.
I would be ecstatic if they had, like, a globally distributed war, like, that you can, like, you know, these strategies and all that.
First of all, I'm going to allow that, Allie, because that's barely a curse word. But
it's fine.
It's fine. I'm saying it's fine. Anyway, I'm skeptical of any sort of world war on Avatar, because if you listen to the commentaries, they talk a lot about how they, for the Civil Wars episodes in Book 2, they, like, couldn't show entire armies marching down, like the Northern Invasion, because they don't have the resources. So what they did was just show close-ups of a few ships, and I don't think that would... I don't think it necessarily worked in those episodes, and I don't think it would work for this larger war.
Yes,
if they have that thought process. I think they could do large invasions. It's just super hard to animate well. Like, how well Korra is animated and detailed, doing, like, 1,000 ships like that would just be almost impossible.
They would have to just completely, like... copy-paste them and be in lines, but
copy-paste.
I mean... Copy-paste.
Yeah, and they wouldn't do that.
Obviously, that's not how they do it, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, so I'm skeptical of where this episode, where this plot line's going, because I don't want to see another war, because the last one didn't work for me.
Unless this one's more of a revolution, they are at least setting this one up with more historical context, because the Queen is clearly, like, shown to be, like, a hierarchy, a government of antiquity. She's very old. Like, look at the way she's dressed. She's very much... what we saw in Avatar, and that was 70 years ago, and she's wearing the same hairstyles as the women at the party that Katara and Toph go to, and like the same... Sorry. Katara.
Yeah, compare Ba Sing Se to Republic City. Ba Sing Se is basically the same as 70 years ago, and Republic City is just such a new city, yeah. I think that's a good...
It's like so different.
I think that's a really good point, yeah.
You can see the citizens are not happy. Like, revolutions don't pop out of thin air, so...
Yeah, except we've seen like descent, and we saw Mako and Bolin's grandmother still liking the Earth Queen, so it's kind of an interesting dichotomy in that city.
She's one of those.
Very much of like China and the Emperor.
Can't
overthrow him.
That shot was very out of place in episode 3, the grandmother like being, oh, don't insult the Earth Queen, Her Majesty. So I think that's very obviously going to have some relevance later in the season.
Well, it's kind of like if you look at these, like if you compare it to the only real like modern day monarchy that we have, you know, with England, and how, I mean, you've always got that grandparent in these, if you watch the BBC, like there are these kids who will say something about the Queen and the grandparent comes in and he's like, that's your sovereign queen. It's sort of, I guess, I mean, it's meant to be like comedic, but it's...
Can we talk about that at British
also, again,
British voice?
Showing more of that tension between, which I guess is an overall theme in Korra, but that tension between the archaic and the new. Yeah. I mean, literally, you've got a republic versus a monarchy, essentially, with this Ba Sing Se Republic City stuff.
Yeah.
Which couldn't be more obvious.
Yeah, we've seen the Republic City's president prominently.
I do a great British accent.
That was pretty great. We saw President Raiko prominently. We saw the leader of the Earth Nation, the Earth Queen, Hutin, prominently. Like, it seems like we're setting up for some sort of conflict. And maybe maybe the Fire Lady comes into play. Too.
Maybe that mysterious fire lady.
AKA Honora.
Oh.
Honora. Honora.
Honora. Anyway.
Honora.
Honora.
So I think that's interesting.
To be identified.
I think if you...
It's Suki.
I think the season's been so great individually by episode that if we're going to have complaints looking back, it might be that the main conflict of the season is set up in these random two episodes in the middle, and then, you know, we don't get to the end, but I'm just speculating. So
it's not really random.
We'll see how it goes. I mean, it's random in that the main plot arc right now is Airbenders, and it's just this random...
Well, there's also, you know, the four villains.
Yes, so we'll see how they come into play, too. Yeah. Going to be interesting.
This calls this overarched to season four, because this could easily, season three and four could easily go together.
I feel like they won't do that, though.
So they ordered books three and four at the same time, so I think it's very likely they have plot connections together.
Yeah, they did?
They ordered them at the same time, yes. So they were very aware that they were going to have book four to go on when they made book three.
Oh, fantastic.
Second biggest thing I want to talk about from this episode is Jenora's astral projection. And by that, I mean her spirit leaving her body and doing things on its own. This is something that we see in a lot of mythology and modern religion.
Horror movies.
I don't know. But it's a thing. And it's a big thing,
yeah. And I guess you wouldn't even call it pseudoscience, but it's like things in a lot of supernatural stuff where... It's in Insidious. If you watch
that. Oh, good. I'm going to have a big lecture on this, I think, during episode 5. But for now, we can just discuss whether we like this or not.
It's different.
It's different.
It's different. It's not bad.
To say the least.
He was never seen.
Aang did this, but he was, in the spirit world.
Yeah.
He's also
They're kind of changing the rules.
Yeah, he's also the Avatar.
The way it came back here a little convenient. And it's going to be even worse if it doesn't come back again the rest of the season. Because literally in two lines they cleaned that up because they were like, oh, you can still do that? And she's like, yeah. It's not as strong, but yeah. And that was the end of it.
So
yeah,
I don't know if I want to discuss this now or later, but this is going to come back in the season. Really, I'm 100% sure.
Like, why can just airbenders do that? They're making it seem like the airbenders are the only people that can become spiritual.
That would be so cool.
Like the spirits from Mom.
I don't think that's how it works.
Between Brittany and Jenora.
Yeah, exactly.
Would possess people.
Wow.
Jenora is just nice about it, and Britt would be evil about it.
I would possess people and make them do stupid things.
I think it's cool, and since it's Jenora, it's fine.
Things, Allie. No, I would possess the Earth Queen and then take over the world. Anyways.
Okay.
But I just think this seems a little far-fetched within the logic of Avatar.
I just don't really like how they're making the airbenders really the only spiritual ones, kind of. It's making them seem like only airbenders can do this.
Yeah, so I've noticed Jenora told Kai this was a high-level airbending technique.
Like, what?
I think
she was
just tongue-in-cheek.
The problem is, there's two factors here. One, she's talking to Kai, who she just might be trying to quickly explain it to. But also, we see a lot of exposition said through characters explaining things to other characters, very factually, and it's like, okay, they're talking to this person, but they're actually talking at the audience. We see a lot of that in this episode.
And
I think that's supposed to be that. So I feel like she's actually trying to say this is an airbending technique.
Also, time out. How come she could talk to Kai when she was, all bluey and stuff, but Aang couldn't talk to anybody?
Well, this is obviously different.
It's different, because Aang was doing it, he was...
Aang was in the spirit world. Stuff. Yeah.
Maybe she's peptidoglycan and she's on the membrane.
No.
This is getting all science.
I
was just a metaphor, anyways.
I would like if they
she's coming through, you know? She's in the physical world, not quite.
I would like if they explained the Aang in the spirit world, but still being physical, because in book one of Avatar we saw a giant contrast between I don't remember those episodes' names, 107 and 108, where Aang was talking to Katara
Is that the solstice? No.
The winter solstice parts 1 and 2, and the finale episode where Aang was, actually in the spirit world. And it's very confusing why one time he was in the actual spirit world and one he was just still in their world. So if they explain the their world thing in the season, I would be good with that.
It makes sense if he's doing what Jenora was doing, but it would make better sense if Jenora wasn't able to talk to people as well.
Here's a theory. What if the only reason she can interact with the real world is because the portals are open?
That would make sense.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
She's filtering through. That would explain why she flickers.
This is the type of thing we'll hear Mike and Brian explain in the commentaries next year, but they'll never actually say in the show.
I don't hold out any hope to them making any sense there, though.
Yeah, them in the commentaries isn't great. Okay, anyway.
I kind of like that better, though, than just her being like, oh, yeah, I could do that. Hey, what's up?
Any other thoughts on the astral projection? I mean,
cool.
Are we going to talk about her trip?
Yeah, so there's two things to talk about with her trip. The first one is her interacting with Kai, which the Jin Kai adorableness is. Does everyone ship it at this point?
Yes. Everyone ships it. If you don't have a ship it, you don't have a soul.
Really?
If only because it's funny because Tenzin doesn't like it.
Yeah, Tenzin was like,
Tenzin's
no.
Tenzin's not going to be happy about this.
Of note is we are declaring it's Jin Kai. I've seen some pushback on that.
No, it's Kainora.
It's not. It is. That's just not true.
Jin Kai sounds really disjointed.
It's stupid. Yes,
Kainora sounds like a strip name.
Well, okay.
Oh my god.
Kainora.
Jin Kai. Like something
Jin Kai is what it
that
is.
You would
Sorry.
Do on a mat in a geese with.
It means monstrous humanoid, just saying.
That's definitely
great.
Not.
So I'm going with Kainora.
Kainora it is. You can have
No, sorry, but that's not allowed on this podcast.
No, sorry, but
Jin Kai is what we're going with. Anyway,
I think it's
pretty adorable. We see of note is in their actual like relationship development is we see for the first time Kai evidence of him liking Jinora back because he blushes when Jinora kisses him on the cheek.
Aww,
we hadn't seen that previously. Except maybe in the training in episode 3 in the beginning. I don't know if he blushed when
I don't remember if he blushed either.
Yeah, I don't remember if he
blushed. I don't
think
so. I think he was just looking generally confused at her sort of attention towards him.
Mm-hmm. He was like the girl, I don't understand.
Y
no comprende.
Anyway, that's great. The second notable, yes?
Were you going to talk about like Jet and all that?
Yeah, so the second notable thing is, this is just very minor, but one of the rooms Jinora passes through in Lake Laogai is the room where Jet died in Lake Laogai. This was pointed out by someone on Tumblr, Opals is in their name. I don't know.
I noticed it too.
Did you notice it when you were watching?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I noticed that as
anyway,
well.
Anyway, I did a detailed screenshot analysis, and it mostly holds up. The back wall you see, which is the main focus of the shot, is identical, like detail to detail. So it seems very obvious that either they were intending it or they're just using that room as reference. You'd have to think they were doing it on purpose.
It's a pretty unique room.
Someone says they can see the rock where Jet died.
I looked for that. I think that's just seaweed.
I don't think it's there. I think they're making that up. Yeah, I don't see it there. If you want to be nitpicky, the side walls, I checked. Seriously, I did extremely detailed analysis of this. They're not the same, but it's close. So, and the back wall is identical, so let's go with that.
As far as questions as like why the whole thing is flooded, my guess is it needs constant maintenance to keep the water out, and when they abandoned it, it just floods.
Yeah, or they just like left the latch open or something when they left. Mel, please stop typing. Anyway, no, it's fine for me, and what I hear is fine. Is any comments on that being Jet? I love this type of stuff.
Yes, it's. Pretty definitively. I mean, why else would it be there? Why would they make a room that looks so similar for no reason? So,
yeah, I agree. I mean, I feel like they're going to be like, oh, we didn't do that on purpose. Oh, what are you talking about? But I feel like they're lying.
Yeah. Or whoever drew the backdrop for that scene was like, hey, this is where Jet died. Let's paint this.
Let's put it in there so they don't forget.
Yeah, so I would love to ask one of the storyboarders about this or the background. Actually, this is probably a bad background painter. So I'm not sure. We've had some interactions on Tumblr this week.
Are we
more
not
on
going
that.
Back to the beginning of the episode?
We're skipping
Are we
around.
Not going in order?
We're skipping around. Yeah, we're not going in order. So anyway, yeah, I think that's really cool. You can check out my screenshot analysis of that on our Tumblr, dongfang.tumblr.com. I reblogged someone else and added
my
stuff.
My screen analysis.
I did. I added stuff to it. It's pretty good. Anyway. The villain stuff in the beginning of this episode. I think we overlook that when thinking of this, but we have the whole Zuko, Tanrak, Eska, Desna versus the four villains battle here.
Favorite fight so far.
Yeah, I think it's pretty
maybe it's
great.
Just the all the Attack on Titan I watch and play, but the no armed waterbender is fantastic.
She's so great.
She's very good.
She's awesome. Also great Lyle, so
she's she's great to love. Ming Hua is her name. And
I'm still calling her Armless Chan, but okay.
And Pele, who we see, or Pele, who breaks out and is Combustion Lady. This might
and
be
then
big.
They make out in the truck.
Yes. I guess this isn't big news. We saw this in the trailer, but Jeff, we've seen the episodes, have had a month to digest this. What do you think of her being Combustion Lady?
Yeah, no, I've known that she's.
Yeah, she's in the trailer. It's in the trailer, but I don't know. I guess it's not surprising. It's supposed to be surprising in this episode, but they give it away.
Totally gave it away.
Yeah.
They mention having a similar tattoo, so when you see it come off, you're like, "Well, that's." I remember this.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool. I thoughts on Zuko fighting old Zuko.
Yeah,
Zuko, man.
Brought me back to his fight with that one earthbender, like, thug in the Earth Kingdom.
Lava bender? Oh.
Back in, like, Zuko Alone.
Zuko Alone? Oh.
Yeah, just trading fire with rock. Mm-hmm. Again.
But then this guy can technically also bend fire, so.
No, we talked about this.
It's just technically molten rock. It's not fire. It's
hot rock. It is
it's
not,
just
like,
liquid plastic. Rock.
Thoughts, it involves fire.
Thoughts on...
It involves heat.
It involves
thoughts
fire.
On...
We already know that waterbender
fire. We've discussed this, Allie, so many times.
Okay.
There is no flame.
The explanation that we've given, the guy, someone on the live video podcast said, and I think it makes sense, waterbender can... manipulate the temperature of the element they're bending, so why can't fire as well, or earth as well? Makes sense to me.
I think any fire we see is just spontaneous combustion from coming in contact with it. He's not creating the fire.
Yeah, he's not creating, it's just a result of the heat, I think, that's being applied to the earth, basically. Thoughts on...
It's cool that we're getting more powers distributed, not just waterbenders.
Yeah, we discussed this a little bit, but yeah. Mm. Thoughts on old Zuko not just getting his butt kicked?
Wow.
What?
Old dudes can do all sorts of stuff if you keep up well fitness weight into your life.
I'm saying he didn't really do much. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, he tried.
Well,
but he's like
88 years old.
I think
I mean, come on.
I think he's 85, but yeah.
He's 88.
Like, how old's Katara?
Zuko was...
86, I think.
How old was Zuko in the series?
Or he's 87, I think.
16.
Oh, okay, then he's plus two. You're right. 87. I think it's understandable that the 87-year-old cannot fight that well. Okay, of note is Nick.com.
He knows pretty good for an 87-year-old. His dragon holds up okay.
Nick, yeah, exactly. Speaking of Zuko's dragon, Nick.com has a Zuko's dragon flight game, and it says the name of Zuko's dragon, Druk. And Druk translates to Thunder
to Dragon.
Thunder Dragon. So dragon. Zuko named his dragon Dragon, which is pretty great.
Good job.
I mean, he wouldn't be the first person.
Yeah, it's similar to... to Dany in Game of Thrones naming her dragon Drogon. So
she got real creative.
He's a Khaleesi. He has white hair and a dragon named Dragon.
So basically, Zuko is Khaleesi now.
Khaleesi. It's not Khaleesi. It's a title.
Any other thoughts on this fight? I just
not
think it's really. I thought it was very well done.
Yep.
Yeah. Just every action sequence this book has been very well done so far. It's impressive.
Oh yeah.
Oh, they did another freeze the face move. So
yeah, that was great.
That was pretty cool. Turned into a drill and was like, bye.
Yeah.
Bye.
Also, the snowstorm effect thing was cool.
That was very cool.
That's no snowstorm.
That's no snowstorm. Yeah.
Zahir.
Okay. I want to talk Kai in the Airbender army prison thing. First of note is that the Dai Li sergeant training him is voiced by Gary Cole, who's like a big name actor, and him voicing this minor part is weird. But yeah, he's cool. Look up Gary Cole.
Who?
Gary Cole.
Oh.
I don't know if you know
that was him.
Yes, that's the drill, the sergeant. Two questions I have, both I think aimed at Jeff here from the scene. One, Kai, I think, comes across as very likable in this. Did this do anything to convince you that... that he's like a good guy.
Yeah, I mean he's likable for sure. I guess probably I don't see a dichotomy. I think he can still be a little punk and be like friendly to people in the same predicament. So, but it definitely bumped his likeness up a little bit.
No thanks.
Okay, no problem, Britt. No. what about you all? Do you like, does Kai come across as sympathetic to you?
He does, but that's like children, yeah. So.
I mean, here's my thing. I mean, yeah, he's like gypping them before and stealing from them, but I don't think that necessarily made him come off as like malevolently devious. I think it was just, you know, he's a street kid and he's not a complete jerk. I mean, I think it's one of those type of deals.
Mm-hmm.
He was sympathetic, but I didn't really feel sympathy because I still don't really know how to feel about him.
Yeah, I don't
he's
think
he's like a product of his environment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Something are we all definitely. Not products?
Of Aren't we all?
Yes. But some people are more so products of their.
How okay. deep is Sami? But yes.
What are we all doing here?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, exactly.
Second question I have for Jeff, based on the scene, is last podcast we talked about how the one problem we had with the Airbenders just popping up is that they all seemed just very skilled, very fast. I think this episode does a lot to address that by seeing lower skilled Airbenders training with Kai and the Daily Sergeant. Do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think all my concerns about what are these people getting all these skills from totally unfounded, because the only one who's exhibited any skill is Ahir, and we'll get some more cool story on him, but it's not like everyone gets skilled just magically.
Yeah, I think Zaheer is going to have a reason why he's so good, and Kai seems good, but he's not that good. And
he's just like naturally skilled, I think.
He's probably been practicing it, and he's like more naturally gifted, which happens with Bender. Yeah. Yeah, I think this.
I mean, with Zaheer, he's like, I mean, everyone's saying he's an Airbender weeaboo. I mean, he's probably like he even like is obsessed with that guru, so it makes sense that he's really good at airbending. It's just like he's insanely good.
I have a lot of comments on Zaheer and the guru coming up, but yeah. I think this does a good job of I think they're doing a really good job covering their butts on these new plot lines they create. Like, yeah. They're executing them pretty well.
Much more than they used to, at least.
Yeah.
Yes.
Quick note on the Korin Asami fighting in the beginning of the episode.
Yeah. Thank you for mentioning that. Dating. I was afraid you were going to skip over it.
Dating question mark? Anyway, continue.
Why is the question mark there? They're dating.
Okay. Good.
You only apologize to people you're dating.
No, you only thank people you're dating.
You only thank people you're dating.
Yeah, great.
That's what it was.
And I guess the action sequence at the end. I guess other random things I can think of off the top of my head. Boomy talking in code to Lin. I thought that was pretty funny.
Cue the balloons.
Bolin and Mako with Kai. We talked about him still being sketchy. We're not sure on Kai. And just the entire fight scene breaking out, I thought was very well executed. It wasn't necessarily the most exciting, though. That's the only one thing.
It was sweet to see how the Airbenders were, like, with Korra, though.
Yeah. One thing I will say, I mentioned, I'm just repeating myself from the spoiler podcast, but that's inevitable, is that I don't understand the Earth Queen being allergic to animals as a plotline. I don't think I think they execute fine, but it's like a dumb thing to include in the first place. But I will say the conclusion of it, with Oogie shedding and her sneezing at the end. I think that's very good way to tie everything together. Like, it calls back to the Avatar with the whole Appa shedding episode in whatever, episode 207.
Is that even important? Why are we...
I thought for sure they were going to get, like, a Shirshu in there and start tracking them.
Oh my god, yes. June's long-lost
granddaughter. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. This episode to me is just so well put together. Like, even that conclusion just works for me. It's nothing's fantastic, but I think it's just very solid.
Mm-hmm. Wait, but the, like, real, real conclusion, when I like how, like, Tenzin, like, gave them a choice. Like, relocate you, or you can come with me, and then everyone was like, I want to come. I was like, oh my god, yes.
I'm getting pretty tired of the whole Spartacus thing. That's like every time groups of people have choices, it's always Spartacus.
Well, one person's got to break the
exactly
silence. I mean, they
someone's
got to
do it first. Yeah.
Are they holding hands in that picture?
They might be.
Maybe.
It might be.
I mean, they're all in the same boat. They can't go back because they would be thrown in jail if they go back home.
Anyway, so. Ali linked to a Korra and Asami, obviously, picture in chat. Obviously, that's what we're
talking about.
Okay. Yeah. Any more thoughts on specific plot points in this episode?
I really don't like how Tenzin and Korra always break up, because everything goes to hell.
I don't think they're breaking up, they're just separating. They seem very...
Well, I mean,
that's
like,
exactly what it's breaking up.
They do that all the time, and then everything gets crazy when that happens. So they need to realize that they need to stay together.
Yeah.
They're in a horror movie, and they're...
They have to
they're
split
white
up.
People in a
they're the white
movie.
People.
I want some more Tenzin, because we got shirtless Tenzin, but I was like so disappointed. It's like, why?
Yeah, no Tenzin fight so far, yeah.
Well, I mean, he fought against the Daili, kind of.
There's so many people in that fight sequence, just everyone.
Wait, the next episode was... Oh, never mind.
Okay, let's... Final thoughts and grade it, so we can move on to episode 5. Remember, out of 10, 5 is an average episode of television, 10 is the best episode of television you've ever seen. Mel, what would you give it, and why?
Sorry.
6.7.
Okay, why?
because I think it was a lot better than previous episodes of Korra that we've been seeing, but I don't think it was...
We didn't get your grade on the Earth Queen. Did you like it better than episode 3?
Think for a minute. They all blend together in Spanish.
The first Passing Say episode.
Yeah. I liked the second episode better, I think. Okay. So I'm going to put that at like a lower grade.
All right. Allie, what would you give it?
Debating between a 6.5 and a 7. I think I'll say 7.
There aren't other numbers between.
Well, I'm not choosing why? A random thing.
Any more thoughts or just what we said?
I mean, what were you saying about comparing the two episodes? I think I put the second part higher too, but mm-hmm. It was good, but I was also kind of bored, but it was really good. I mean, there was nothing about it I didn't like, so
yeah,
I'll stick with a 7.
Britt.
I'm giving it a 7.5.
Okay.
Because I really liked the villain stuff. Like, I really like the villain stuff. It's my favorite part of the whole season so far, and probably Korra ever. I just really enjoy them and their fight scenes. But the rest of the episode was kind of, I want to say dull, but I wasn't as excited about it as everything else. Mm. So there's nothing wrong with it, though. So if it was your favorite part of the episode, you were not in the wrong.
Jeff.
I would say I'm in the same boat as a lot of people here. Give a solid 7. It's entertaining. Wasn't too surprising. Didn't throw anything out, any curveballs. And basically the entire plot was known from the trailer. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. Wow, maybe I'm just in a good mood these weeks, but I think
are you
guys,
gonna give it a like?
No. I think you guys are underrating it. This is an 8.75 for me.
Oh my god, that's so high.
Round up, 8.8.
8.8, sure. 8 and 7 and 8 3/4. This is, sorry for the telephone background. This is it's basically perfect, right? Like there's nothing wrong with
your Domino's is here.
I wish. There's nothing. The villain fight was great. The whole episode was solid. I love the Jinora stuff. The fight at the end was great. I think the only reason it's not a 9 is because it's slightly boring, but it's just so good. The season is so good so far. I don't know. Come on.
You're really generous.
I'm interested to see what you're going to give the next episode because I know you liked that one better.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's going to be very
good.
It's going to be very high, so we'll see when we get to that. Okay, let's get into the Middle Queen.
Well,
the Middle Queen. The Middle Queen, that would be a good name.
The Middle Queen.
Well, so Sue is basically the Middle Queen.
That's what Toph is.
Queen on the Iron Throne?
Yeah, Toph is the Middle Queen. Okay, the Middle Clan.
Okay, Wizard of Oz.
Initial thoughts, I'm going to go first. So this is my favorite episode of Korra ever. I don't think it's close. I think this is right. The quality of writing we haven't seen in years from anyone on the writing staff, and this episode was written by Mike. Wow,
Mike!
I'm so impressed.
I didn't know Mike wrote it.
Mike wrote this episode.
Yeah, Michael DiMartino was. So
I think this is easily Mike's best script since.
Oh.
The Blind Bandit, and I think this episode is very similar to The Blind Bandit. I think they should be compared. I think Mike is great at writing character introductions. Mm-hmm. Toph in The Blind Bandit is introduced so well. Mm-hmm. It's one of the most impressive first character episodes I've seen in any show. And this episode does it again, but with two characters are introduced that well. It's incredible. Sue and Opal are... You just get such an amazing sense of them in one episode. And it's episode is split between them and Lynn. Like, it's incredible. I think this episode is basically perfect. The mm-hmm. city we see immediate, the city design Zafu is the best city design in Avatar history. I think that maybe you could say there's no plot or whatever, but I don't care. The dialogue is almost perfect, except the last minute of the episode.
Oh, come on.
And yeah, it's and we see the B plot, Kaya and Zaheer, is maybe the best fight scene in Korra history.
Oh, that was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's perfect. I'm so in love with it. I'm sorry if I raised expectations for the initial thoughts. You guys don't have to agree with me on loving it, but what do you think, Mel?
I really, really did like it, just at least for the sake of all the characters who got introduced and the way they got introduced and the return of Varric. And I think that Kaya and Zaheer's plot had more plot than the main plot did, which, if the other parts of the episode weren't as good, would have made this, I think, seem a lot worse than it was. But just the characterization kind of made up for... I guess it wasn't a lack of plot, but it was like a slow-moving plot for the thing, for Cora's side. So I did really, really like it. It's been my favorite so far.
Allie?
Well, I don't know if it's been my favorite so far, but it's definitely up there, especially after you mentioned that Mike wrote it. I'm impressed too. I didn't even know that. But even also what you said about he's really good with introducing characters, and that was like the best part of the episode. Other than that, though, it was... not boring, but I mean, like Mel said, only like Kaya and Zaheer was like the real like plot. But even then, it was really, really good. And it's definitely up there for one of my favorites, but I really don't think it's my number one favorite.
Yeah, well, we can get into that in grading.
Also, Alison Stoner as Opal is the best.
Yeah, we'll talk about voice actors in a minute.
So great.
Britt, what do you think?
Did you say Britt or Jeff?
I said Britt. Okay. I'm going in the same order all the time.
Who's Jeff?
I said Jeff. Yeah, there's a random fifth person on the team.
Jeff.
It, like, cut out on my end. Anyways, this was definitely my favorite episode so far. I really liked the introduction of characters. Like, I didn't think that was boring. And I think, like, introducing a character is plot in its own way. So I liked that. The characters are reasonably likable. Introduced well. The animation was really pretty. The city... Sue is a whole and complete person, and she's not like a Suki character. Like, she has flaws. She's obviously like a perfectionist and like a little bit arrogant.
Suki.
And I saw myself in this episode because Opal is there. And I really do like her and Bopal's and her and Bolin's like interactions. I liked the Bopal scenes because they were super cute.
Please do not.
I can do this whole podcast in a white girl voice. Just
please don't.
Egg
please
me
don't.
On. Anyways. And they were very, like, down to earth. And, like, Bolin's kind of, like, a theatrical character. And to see him just, like, calm down was nice.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, what do you think?
He's a very calming character. Like, this whole, like, that whole family just seems very calming.
Yeah, we'll get
in its own, like, strange way.
Definitely get into specifics on the family. Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
I, too, enjoyed this immensely. I loved... Suyin's voice actor, our actress, is fantastic. I'm really curious about the socioeconomic dynamic of this metal city. Like, everyone's rich, looks like. Or, like, the standard of living is, like, just ridiculously
everyone's
high.
Everyone's rich.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, where does, like, is it, like, a commune sort of thing? Or do they just have this ridiculous source of wealth? Like, are they a good inventor? I don't know what, but cool. It seems like this is a bit of a trope in some other anime I've seen. You had like the idyllic mechanized steampunk society.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this is very much that with their retractable domes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. Which is definitely not going to help them when the evil guys come, but we'll see.
They're totally going to put those up and then metal bending.
I love Avatar's take on that trope though. Everything's metal and metal bending. I think that's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Any other
metal
thoughts,
metal flowers.
Not yet.
Yes, let's get into specifics. First, we should mention the new voice actors, because there's a ton of new characters here. Suyin, S-U-Y-I-N, for the record. Brian posted it on Tumblr, one word. The nickname Sue is voiced by Anne Heche, who is a major actress in Hollywood, I guess. I mean, I don't know how major she is, but she's kind of a big deal. She did a voice on Adventure Time, apparently, recently. And I'd say she's the biggest name, kind of tied with J.K. Simmons and Aubrey Plaza.
I'd say J.K. Simmons is
I think
first.
We overrate how well-known J.K. Simmons is. He's not actually in that much stuff, but he's
pretty
well-known.
He's not in a lot of stuff, but he's very well-known.
He's somewhat wise. I'd say Anne Heche is more well-known, but it's close, obviously. I think Aubrey Plaza is, like, the biggest star right now, but she's young. But anyway, it's a big deal. Alison Stoner as Opal, I think she does actually a fantastic job. I'm going to talk about her a lot. And of note, the guy we meet in the beginning is Ai Wei. Is that Ai Wei or is that the husband? Who's named Ai Wei?
Ai Wei is the dude who can
tell lies.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's A-I-W-E-I, one word. I don't remember who his voice actor is. But And the son who makes sculptures, aka Skrillex, is voiced by Jason Marsden, who did the speaking of Eyeways, the whatever that was, it Eyeway? Is that what the animal's called in Beginnings?
Mm. Yeah,
it's an Eyeway, right?
Oh wait, that's mm-hmm. him.
Yeah, that's Jason Marsden.
Oh god, I knew that was him.
Is he what, the dude who like does the... all the animal voices, or
no? That's
Dee. That's Dee Bradley. Okay. I get Jason Marsden and Scott Menville confused, but it was not Scott Menville, unfortunately. Let's a lot of new characters, a lot to keep track of. Let's talk the city first, Zhao Fu. We kind of talked about the city design already. I just think it's so gorgeously painted.
Wait,
the city.
Do we have? Did someone like translate what that means, or does it not mean anything?
Zhao Fu.
Yeah.
I don't know. We can look it up now.
Right, never mind.
Allie, what do you think it means?
I don't know. I don't speak Chinese. If that is Chinese.
Oh, okay.
Guessing it means metal city.
I think it is Chinese.
He's a guy in Chinese mythology. Zhao Fu.
What?
Zhao Fu is a guy in Chinese mythology, says Wikipedia. Oh. Anyway, the city is the airship. Everything from the airship terminal to Sue's mansion. Everything is so cool. The design, the color, it's just
really
gorgeous.
Reminds me of Oz, but someone also said it looks like the Capitol. So now it just looks like those two.
I mean, the people look like Oz because they're all dressed in the exact same shade of green.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And the rest of your kingdom, you've got shades of earthy colors in various types and brightnesses. These people, I guess it's a testament as well to the height of, I don't want to say it is wealth, but just the standard of living there is that they're all wearing like beautiful emerald.
And they all have time to like pursue their own interests and achieve their maximum potential. Like they don't really have to get down to the grit and work, apparently.
Yes, yeah, so let's talk. We can talk a little bit about the mechanics of the city. We only see so many people in the city, right? Next week we'll see. Spoilers. We'll see more of it, but like we only really see Sue's family, I think. And this does seem kind of like a utopia.
Oh yeah, definitely.
It's interesting because Sue seems to attribute this to their style of government. In discussing in the incredible dinner scene, she's discussing.
Why is it incredible?
It's so that scene is so good. Just the transitions between different parts of the table. They do that a lot, and this is the best example in Korra of them just going around the table, different people talking about different things, and it's all super interesting.
It's not awkward either.
It's not awkward. The transitions aren't awkward. It's great. Sue's talking to Korra about the Earth Queen and how, oh, I hate her. And
she's antiquated.
She's awful, and it's antiquated, and it's better to have just like a leader like they do here. And yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to explore this leadership dynamic among the city more. How is it so opulent, it seems, et cetera, et cetera. It's hard.
I mean, they have the crystals on her forehead, and I've seen those, like, green crystals several times. So my guess is they excavate them somehow and do something with
them. Could it involve, like, the Ba Sing Se crystals?
Because
we know we're going...
If she's involved with the Earth Queen, she, like, sells her thing.
Oh, man. Because we know we're going to the catacombs of Ba Sing Se, because Brian posted...
Oh, no, she's going to be a villain.
Brian posted a still of Mako and Bolin in the Ba Sing Se catacombs, so... Or what looks like them, I should say.
Or she could end up not... Maybe she's not a villain, though. Maybe she's just, like, will turn against the Earth Queen and be helpful.
If she's going to be slightly evil at all, it's going to be in a Varric way. Like, yeah. An ambiguous, like, you know. There's no way she's pure evil, but yeah.
The way she was talking about the Earth Queen doesn't seem like she has any personal knowledge of her. Like,
I mean, without
if she was in cahoots, she'd know him better.
I think it's a little... I think it's more likely that they're, like, oppose each other rather than they're, like, in cahoots.
Yeah. That makes sense, like being opposition, because she has something to gain by going into war.
Like, yeah, like
she can have full control of the crystal like, mines there.
Like Sue joins the United Republic in the war against the Earth Kingdom.
Oh my god.
Yeah, something like that.
You're so excited.
You can be excited, stop.
And then Opal talks against it because she's all peaceful Avatar Nomad now.
Avatar Nomad. Not Air Nomad.
Air Nomad.
Yeah. Avatar Nomad.
Yeah, so let's get into Sue since we're already talking about her. I love the characterization of her as the matriarch of the family and of the city. That's super appealing to me. And
so good. I love it. She's the best.
I love that they're doing an unabashedly female female leader, kind of a not like queen, but like person in complete charge, full authority, completely.
That's a queen.
I know it's interesting because she calls herself not a queen, but
I mean, I guess if she did a crappy job, they could probably like,
my point is like
leader anymore, but
it's like they dive full head on to her having complete control of everything and just being in a position of power, and it's great, and it's not ironic or anything, and it's perfect.
And she's not even like masculine in her.
Way. She's
not masculine. She's very feminine. Mm-hmm. She's very like motherly. So that's nice. She's very much the antithesis of Lynn.
Sue is the most feminist thing the show has had.
Yes.
Yeah, so it strikes me that she like maintains her rule by just having the best ideas and garnering all the trust of the people. Like
it seems like she doesn't
have to extend her will.
Yeah.
Because they'll just follow her anyways.
It seems like she just has complete control because she's great and everyone loves her. Yeah.
She's awesome.
I want to know more about the telling dynamic between Lynn and Sue.
Mm-hmm.
We will see that next episode.
We will find out.
That's the focus of next episode. Spoilers, but anyway,
read the episode description and probably figure that out.
Yeah, it's in the episode description. It says Beifong's past is talked about, yeah. Sue, I think Anne Heche voices her. I think she just does a great job of bringing inherent sympathy to this character.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just every emote she has to do is, like, great. And I don't think that made grammatical sense, but whatever. And, yeah. I don't know. She just does a fabulous job.
She's just like, oh, I'm so proud of those two.
Yeah.
Like
she means it. She's very genuine.
And when she yells, I love her line read on nice power, whatever the son's name is. She's like into it. You can tell
when they were playing that dangerous game where they could break their faces.
Yeah.
But she's not like putting down the other one at the same time. You can tell.
Yeah. It's just like very encouraging and excited. Yeah. I think she brings a lot to that role, and
I imagine it's the same kind of praise that Bean would have given his soldiers in the Shadow series.
Yes,
I do not know what that.
I'm glad someone got that reference.
But okay. anyway, more about Sue. What else do we see her do in this one? Because I don't want to talk about anything for next one.
She dances. No, okay.
Okay, let's get into this. Okay. So, in the episode, Sue says to Lynn, same mom, different dads, which I think is really interesting. Let's talk about that for a second. This seems very progressive of Avatar.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, it could be that Toph was married and then had a kid, and then first husband died, and then second husband. But that doesn't seem like what they're going for.
Toph gets around.
So, I don't like that. Let's not make assumptions, because that kind of has a negative connotation, and you know, she could just be doing what she wants, which is fine.
They leave it very open-ended to interpretation, which I think is what they were going for. They were going to be like, this is for sure.
Well, there's no way, well, I mean, for all we know, he could have died, but the fact that neither of them have met their fathers or know the identity of their fathers is interesting.
Like, Toph didn't even tell them about their fathers. I think they know who they are. They're just like, we didn't know our fathers, mean like we didn't get to know them.
Sue never says that they don't know who they are. She just says they didn't. She just says they never met them.
I mean, they could have assumptions. I mean, she collects rare meteorites.
Mm-hmm. And I've noticed.
Yeah, but so did Toph.
Yeah, So.
Let's calm down.
Who gave her the meteorite?
Of note is that Sue is seemingly darker skinned than Lynn. And so everyone's been saying, when the episodes leaked, we're all like, okay, is Sokka the father? And last night, someone on Tumblr posted a picture of Sue's shelf. There's the detail, just a very detailed shelf, and they noticed how Sokka's dragon pipe was among one of the things on her shelf. So then the guy who storyboarded the scene, reblogged him as like, I'm glad someone noticed all the details on here. Will Ruzicka, who is a storyboarder on Colin Heck's team. And so then I reblogged it saying, Sue has Sokka's pipe. Sue is Sokka's dad confirmed? ? So then he reblogged it, and he reblogged what I said and said, I didn't remember it was Sokka's pipe when I put it there. It wasn't meant as a clue or anything, just an Easter egg.
Didn't he delete that later?
And then, I reblogged and said, heartbroken, Taka not confirmed. And then he deleted everything involving this picture, which I think is interesting. But it's still there on our Tumblr if you want to see, because I reblogged it, so it's always there.
Is that going to be, like, a plot point then, though? Like, is it really that important?
I think probably he just. Not, I think he just didn't want to. Sure. I think he just didn't want to get into any of this. He was like, I probably shouldn't have gotten into anything like that.
But yeah. Totally, he thought someone was just like noticing like details, and he was like, "Oh, cool! I made that."
And he's like, "Oh no! What have I done?"
Yeah, exactly. big props to Will Ruzicka, who is I don't know. I apologize for mispronouncing the name. Who is active on Tumblr with reblogging Korra stuff. He reblogged the scenes. He helped storyboard. He replied. I made a post last night saying, "I think the big question after tonight is Metal Clan the best episode of Korra?" And he replied to it saying, having worked on that episode, thank you, but there are some amazing episodes to come, which is pretty cool.
Oh, boy.
Also, then, Eugene Lee, who also storyboards for Colin's team. Colin's team is storyboarders are very active on Tumblr. Mr. Unagi, is his handle, says, there will only be better, smiley face.
Oh, God.
Also replied to that post. Anyway, if you want to check out Will Ruzicka, it's Ruzicka-reblogs. This is Tumblr handle. So that's super, I think it's exciting how confident they are.
People don't have a Tumblr handle. They have a Twitter handle. You have a Tumblr URL.
That's such a lame name, URL. come on.
That's literally what you have. You have a URL. Pay attention, Dylan.
You have a handle.
I'm calling it a handle. I'm calling it a handle.
What is he, a teacup? No.
I love handles.
What is he, a teacup? Nice response. Anyway, props to those two for replying and stuff and being active. It's awesome to interact with the Korra crew. We haven't really done it before. Last night was the first time. It was really cool
to kind of interact with them. Except for those times that Janet Varney on Twitter.
Like the people who actually have creative decision power. Anyway.
Speaking of Janet, I was listening to her podcast and with Mindy Sterling, and it was funny. She said that she has a half-sister, too, and I was like, wait. They definitely took that and put it in the show.
I don't think they took Janet's life story and put it in the show.
No, not Janet, Mindy.
Oh, Mindy said that? Oh, that's interesting, yeah.
That's why I'm saying, like, oh, they totally did that on purpose.
Yeah, that could be, they could have done that.
Her dad's Sokka?
Yep.
question mark?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Anyway. Sterling's dad is Sokka.
We're still holding out hope that Sue is Sokka. Sue's dad is Sokka. And we will discuss that again next week. Not that there's any more clues.
Sue is
there's
Sokka,
not really,
guys.
But
he lives in you.
He lives in you.
Thank you.
Let's get into Opal. Okay, so first of all, why the Brit jokes? Brit's like internet name has all been Opal, OPAUL for years, like before Korra even aired.
Since I was 12.
We called her that before we knew what her real name
was. Yeah, we called her this before we knew what her name is. This is, so it's very freaky to see like a character.
I always pronounce it as Opal.
And also, so Opal is just Brit, in case you're unaware. Opal's a really interesting character because she's kind of a Mary Sue archetype to start. And I think they do a good job dispelling that almost right away. But then I still think she's kind of that archetype. So I think it's interesting to see where they're going to take this character. I say Mary Sue because she's just this sweet, very sympathetic girl who's a love interest to one of the characters and seems kind of perfect.
Yeah, she doesn't have, well, we don't see too much of her either, but hopefully we'll see more. We do see her be kind of timid, and timidity and being timid can be a character flaw if they develop it more, which they haven't done it too much.
Like, I think the thing that dispels the Mary Sue is actually, like, another positive trait. It's, like, her telling Bolin to act like himself, which...
Yeah, so standing up for herself, ridiculous. Like, I don't like how you're talking to me.
I love that scene.
I was pretty not impressed with Bolin's dialogue to himself in the mirror and then right afterwards when he was talking to her, so I'm glad that they addressed that.
Yes.
But I don't think they addressed it in the right way.
Because you wanted her to say, like, stop being a dummy?
Yeah, you can stop trying to impress me. Like, not that. Like, maybe being...
I think they're the same thing.
Well...
The connotation that's impressive, like, she's saying, like, literally all she says to him, she's like, stop trying to impress me. Like, that's not
stop
all
trying
so hard,
it's like, stop being a sexist dummy, right? That's what you wanted
to
say.
Yeah, it is what I would have liked to have.
You would like it to be more frank.
I think they're two sides of a similar coin, maybe not the same coin, but I think the important thing is that she gets mad at him.
And she stands up for herself
and she says, stop talking to me like that. Like,
I also
think
don't like the way that they've been writing Bolin the past two seasons with
I think it's perfectly valid to make Bolin sexist. Like, it's bad because we loved him and
have some of the same things, but Balin's just kind of a sympathetic person. And even season one, we saw like very different characterization. Like, when he gives
Cora the flowers
the flowers and the cupcake, and she immediately doesn't respond.
There's an entire feminist Balin meme. Like, it's a complete turn of face with this character, with Balin.
But it doesn't have, like, founding. Like, why?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
I don't think Bolin's character has been handled great, but I think this book 3 characterization is consistent with his book 2 characterization.
I just really hope they make him better, because I had so much hope for him in book 2, and then it came crashing
down. And I say, Bolin, it's perfectly valid that they make Bolin sexist. I do think he's pretty sexist. That doesn't mean he's a bad person. Like,
No, that's not what I'm saying.
I'm not saying that to you guys. I anticipate people talking back to their computers while I'm saying this to them. you can be... Okay, two notes. You can be sexist without meaning to. Yes, you can. And if you're sexist, like, that doesn't mean you're a bad person. It's both of those apply to Balin. Yes.
Yeah, and then, because then you have Mako, who sort of, like, feeds it. And I do blame him. And I think I can, because he's the older brother and he has more life experience. And he shouldn't be doing that, because it's, like...
Yeah, I think Mako is not great.
Like, he feeds the lines and he sort of creates that foundation.
The characterization of Mako in that scene is like him as like an encouraging, like, older brother. It's like, go get it, man. It's like, whatever.
But he's being ridiculous. And he makes his hair that way. He makes his eyebrows
that way.
Yeah, that's the important thing here is the,
like, there is a word for people. I'm gonna say people who do that, and it's not appropriate for the podcast.
I don't.
Tool bag.
Yes, that's better.
I think it's fine if Mako tries to look good.
Yes, but the pain. Never mind.
His eyebrows, you guys.
Is he just constructs? Yeah, I love the way that storyboard that scene. Anyway, back to the storyboarders for a minute. Such a great storyboarding job by Colin's team on this episode. Like, the details from that to Sue's shelf to the beautifulness of, we'll get to in a second, Cora and Opal's training scene is so gorgeously done. This is just such
question.
Seriously, every aspect of production, like, incredible. So that scene of Opal. I want to talk about Alison Stoner voicing her. I think it's the first notable thing when you hear Alison Stoner's voice is how, like, high-pitched and girly it is. And then, so that's my only impression until we get to the stop talking to me like that scene. And then the emotion she conveys there is just so great and so convincing. With her, it's like standing up for herself, like being annoyed with Balin. I just think she nails that scene.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
So good. I am very so impressed with these two.
The ending scene, she did a really great job, too.
Yes, I think she does a great job with the Lynn scene, too, yeah. Very good.
Not sure about the dialogue, but the acting was perfect.
The acting was perfect. The dialogue could be better, but you get the sense that she's a very family-oriented person who's grown up in a very family-oriented society and family-oriented family. Family is important, but I'm not sure if they...
I don't think I've ever heard the word family used so many times in one sentence.
Me neither.
That was like 7 times.
That's like a lot.
I've ever used it in a sentence.
I think that this is to introduce two voice actors and have them be so good in the same episode. And we actually saw this in book 1 with Unalaq and Varric. Both of their voice actors are very good, and we saw them both introduced. Unalaq turns out to be a terrible character, but like the voice actor was good. And it just seems like you can question the trend of them hiring actors instead of voice actors to voice these roles, but they've just been nailing these castings. Huge props to the casting department.
Also Andrea Romano, because
I'm sure she's part of it, but yeah. And just,
what do you mean?
Well, I mean, she might not be part of voice casting. I don't know.
No, not voice casting, but she directs the acting.
She's adhered to her direction, obviously. Like, best in the business, great. What else does Opal do? She trains with Cora. She's like. She's like timid, but still kind of sure of herself. At least I got the impression that she'd be more timid if she was like out of place and not at home. But since she's in where she's in her comfort zone, she's still
the opposite. Because she was like, we kind of saw that she wants to go to the Air Temple.
I think she wants to go, but I think she's
can, like, become not become herself, but like kind of like express herself more.
I don't know if she was at the Air Temple. I don't know if she'd be so quick to
Is she
to train with Korra?
Only daughter.
Yes.
Yeah,
the twins.
She kind of has
twin boys.
Weight upon her shoulders.
Yeah, she is the only daughter.
Twin
yeah.
boys, but Skrillex, that, you know? And her.
Twin boys, Skrillex, and the architect assistant, oldest son. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
She kind of has her mother's weight upon her shoulders, and there probably is some pressure for her to follow with her mother and be like city matriarch again.
Yeah.
But maybe she doesn't want to do that. So.
Yeah.
Or there's kind of the impression that she will become.
She
kind of.
I don't know if she gave off like an earthbender or airbender vibe, but she's just really.
She kind of seems like an airbender.
I feel like she could be not as timid after leaving home.
It's possible. Yeah, I don't know.
I think she's like kind of.
It's speculation.
Know who they are, what they want, you know? Like, she seems very indecisive when she finally makes the decision at the end to tell her parents that I want to go.
I want to read a comment on the DF forums. If I can find it. Basically, if you're going to take issue with Opal's arc here, it's how she just instantly likes Bolin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Burning Lizard on the forum says, if Opal is meant to be Bolin's romantic interest, I have to say it's a bit forced. I don't know why Bright can't wrap their heads around the idea that we don't want to be told two people are romantically interested within a single episode, but that we want development across several episodes.
I agree, mm-hmm. but they're cute.
I mean, it is... There's a lot of times, though, where I could buy a situation where if it's, like, it's a crush, like, oh, you see someone, you're like, oh, like, he's cute or whatever, and then, you know, it's just, it's not a romantic situation at the moment, it's just, I think, like, a crush.
I agree. Crushes, I can buy, I can buy Opal just liking him right away. Crushes happen like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, she's not in love with
him. It's not like they're in love and dating, like, in one episode. Like, I think it's...
No, they're not getting married. It's not like a Sims game where you meet the dude person that day and 4 hours later you're getting married.
I understand Burning Lizard's frustration because Mike and Brian have done this many times, but yes. I think if you're just looking at it from a single episode viewpoint, I think it's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
They just need to branch out a bit.
Also, she's adorable. So.
She is extremely adorable.
She is adorable.
The thing, okay, so the reason I call her like Mary Sue is especially is because she's just so adorable. Like,
being adorable doesn't make you Mary Sue, Dylan. Jeez.
I think it's just. I mean, it's more for me. It's a. it's a Chekhov's adorableness, right? Like, something has to happen with her. I think you don't just have this hugely sympathetic character for the entire plot.
She's secretly the villain.
So that's right. I genuinely think that's one option.
No.
She's secretly the villain. Oh, wait. Her mom, who's the Earth Queen, she starts airbending. She sends her daughter off to infiltrate the Air Nomads, and then the Queen steals the
game. We were talking last night, and you had no calm.
Who?
What
Mel is cutting out. So I think from an archetype perspective, it makes sense for her to be evil because she's just this such sympathetic character. It has to have some resolution. But then when you actually start to look at it logically based on the plot they presented, she can't be evil all along because she's just been in Zhaofu the entire time.
I mean, I kind of like, you remember when like Asani was introduced, a lot of people thought the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So I kind of really hope we're wrong about this too. Cause I really
but Asami plausibly could have been the villain because Hiroshi was evil. So it's just very easy for her to be.
But, I mean,
Sue is not going to just turn evil, right? Like,
no. She'd have to be evil all along.
Be an ambiguously evil character.
She hasn't always been in Zhaofu though. She traveled the world. She could have been evil the whole time.
She was in the
Sue Traveler.
She was at the sand colony.
Also,
Opal has not gone anywhere.
Toph is the
Wait, I need to say something because we were talking about this last night when she said like that she was like she went to the desert like with the sandbenders or whatever, and then like they had a picture of it too. And like in the trailer, we saw like Kurosami running away from the sandbender people or like the sand village. So she might have something to do with that. So she might be.
She's one of the villains, you guys. Do we ever get a good face? And like,
she's not one of.
We don't know her back. We don't.
We've seen all their faces so far.
We've seen all their faces, but what do they look like when they were young? Sue's old.
No, she's not. That doesn't make sense. They're in different places.
They're in different places. That doesn't matter. At one point, they were all in Republic.
You're saying she could have been a fifth?
She could have been a fifth and just not been caught.
That seems far fetched.
Hmm.
I guess it's
Jenora
possible.
Who can asterisk
nothing's far fetched.
That doesn't mean we can go anywhere we want. Anyway,
yes, it does.
Jeff, any thoughts on Opal's arc?
I'm right. You owe me $5.
Nope.
Nope. Okay.
I think a random observation. Mm-hmm. I've just been going through screenshots, and it looks like in the main approach to this Zhaofu city, there's 5 satellite domes, but there's actually a 6th one that's hidden behind the hill, and that's where this family lives.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. They're cut off from the rest of the
city. Well, it's just around the bend.
That's kind of how rulers' places kind of are usually.
Well, I thought they would have been in like the main spire.
They're not the main one though.
No, they're in the far one.
Okay, that's interesting. Again, I apologize for the phone.
Not me.
I think we need to see more of the city dynamic before we can like make too many judgments about Sue and stuff. It's going to be interesting. I can say that having seen the next episode, we don't get a ton of answers, so I really do think this is going to be a continuing plot point throughout the season. Let's get into the Kaya and Zaheer fight. For huge props to Will Ruzicka for seemingly storyboarding this. He says so on...
Oh, are you here for this?
I don't know. Mel is here. So he posted some storyboards on Tumblr about it when he got asked about the scene, which is really cool. You can check them out again on DF Tumblr. I think this scene is just incredibly interesting without having any innate interesting elements behind it. It's like, oh, Zaheer's found out and Kaya and him. It's interesting because we don't really see Kaya fighting before. And Will Ruzicka mentioned this in his ask. He's like, I wanted to make this really good because I don't know if Kaya is going to get a scene like this again. So I wanted to make sure like we show her off in this, even though she has to lose for plot purposes. And I just think it's just super well done, all the action elements.
Amazing. Kaya's just like her mom.
It looks cool. She does the Katara thing. Many Katara moves. Waterbending. Many moves. Specifically the things around her. And then
anytime Korra waterbends, she's doing the Katara thing from now on.
Waterbending? That'd be a good meme, but that'd be confusing. And the like the ice grab of him, I think that was kind of a Katara move. And it's
that was
just
water grab.
Well, it freezes. Thoughts on this fight, Jeff?
No, just really well choreographed. I mean, it's like we get some more of him claiming like he's just a big fan of the Airbender culture.
Yeah, yeah, that's
so much about Lahima and
in a minute.
Airbender weeaboo.
Yeah,
yeah. So like, pretty obvious. I mean, it's totally possible to train as an Airbender and master a lot of stuff without actually airbending. So it's probably what he did.
One more thought on the fight before we get into that. Do you think it's the best fight scene of the season so far?
I don't have enough of a short-term memory to do that.
To like, yeah.
It's very, very good, and it's definitely like the top 5. If there was like...
There have only been 5 episodes so far, but...
This one didn't have a lot of like stages. It was sort of like inside, then outside, then loose. That's a bit short.
Mm-hmm. It was short, but it seemed very natural, you know?
It was good.
I'm just really glad to see Kaya fight.
I really appreciate them. Even if it's not a huge plot development for her character, I really appreciate her being more involved.
Yeah. Me too. Like, just being involved in general. Mm-hmm. And why did he steal that thing? That's like, does that have significance?
What thing?
It helps him airbend, probably.
The glider?
He's obsessed with that guru.
Not the glider.
Did he steal the lot? He took it with him?
He stole the locket.
He did?
He stole, like, the thing.
He took it with him?
Yeah.
I want to know why this is the first time we're hearing about this dude. How come
Okay, let's get into Guru Lahima.
Well, that was retconning. Second time around this time.
So I don't know. Okay, well, it could be a retcon. It's possible Aang never mentioned him. Like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's kind of like the second or third explanation we've had as to why Korra was locked up in that.
Is it?
Yeah. Ice compound.
Was the first? What are the other two?
Well, the first one was because they were like, oh, Aang wanted you to train this way. Because I remember we had a talk on that podcast where we were like, really? Like, why would Aang think that was
a
good idea?
Clearly
it was the first season. So at that
they
point, you
know,
it was
good. And then we found out Korra was like, oh, you guys, Aang told me, or no, you told me that Aang wanted to do that. And then in the second season, they were like, no, it was because we wanted to and we thought it was best for you. And now they actually give a reason.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, we didn't talk about that.
The reason I say it's retconning is obviously because they didn't know all this stuff in the first season.
I agree. I still want to know who
that was episode 4. We didn't really talk about it. I don't think Guru Hima relates to retconning here.
Mm-mm. No, I just meant why she was locked up.
Yeah. I think he does, kind of.
I didn't.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I guess that way, but.
Okay, Gurulahima, a little bit of a lecture here, anyway. Gurulahima says, Zahir quotes Gurulahima as, let go of your earthly tether, enter the void empty, and become wind. I think this is a very important quote, which we'll need to consider throughout the rest of the season. So I took a course a year ago in college on Tibetan Buddhism, and Gurulahima to me seems like a tantric Buddhist master, looking back on what I've studied. And not to get too much into Tantra, but it's this weird form of meditation and goal of reaching enlightenment. It's like kind of like fast enlightenment, where you go through it like super intense meditation. You envision yourself as Buddha, and through that and through other things, you will become Buddha. And normal reaching of enlightenment is just accumulating enough good karma to do it. So this is kind of like the fast approach. And tantric masters have been very important throughout Tibet's Buddhist history. And they've brought many of them over from India because they knew that was the origin of Buddhism. And there's several notable Indian tantric masters that have been brought over to Tibet, like Padmasambhava, among others. And Gurulahima, to me, seems like an Indian tantric master. So the next part of this is there's several techniques practiced by factions or like sects of Tibetan Buddhists that practice tantric meditation to achieve enlightenment faster. And one of them is consciousness projection. I can't remember, I tried to figure out which sect this was. It's been a year since I've taken the class, but it involves projecting your consciousness out of your head and upwards. So that when the time of death comes, you can kind of cheat. After death, quick aside, there is a period of, I actually forget the name, but this is the Teen Wolf thing, Britt. There's a period of intermediate between death and rebirth, where you have to face your own self. And a way of cheating this period is to, in this period, you will likely not Bardo? Be able, Bardo, you will likely,
there, I have to think about it.
You will likely not be able to achieve enlightenment in Bardo and just go cycle back into rebirth. So if you project your consciousness when you die, you can kind of get out of Bardo and achieve enlightenment faster. So you hear of Buddhist masters meditating and projecting their consciousness upward over and over in practice for that one moment. And this sounds like that to me, basically. Let go of your earthly tether, enter the void empty and become winds. Kind of like, and I'm going to tie this back to Jinora here. So this is, I think, where it all comes together for me, is Jinora is kind of astral projecting. And this is not consciousness projection, and I'm not sure that there's too much astral projection within Tibetan Buddhism, and I don't have too much specialty otherwise in my knowledge area of this. But we can kind of relate all of this and see, tie together Jinora saying this is an advanced airbending move, and we can kind of see, okay, ancient airbender gurus are these tantric masters. Gurulahima was one of them. He maybe practiced airbender. This astral projection, which is kind of like this consciousness projection in quote unquote real life Buddhism. And, so maybe Gurulahima was able to do this astral projection. And so, since, Zahir's is studied Gurulahima's teachings one way or another, we don't know why. I think maybe the end goal of this is that Zahir learns this ability and is able to do like crazy things with it.
Or he's just not physiological, wrong PH word, philosophical. Because it's very philosophical, so it could just be he's interested in that and, like, the way the world runs. Because we're getting a lot of political stuff as well this season. He could just be, like, an anarchist, but not in a good way.
And I think it's one more note. I think it's another interesting aspect is they mentioned Toph trying to reach enlightenment, which is like a thing that this series is very Buddhist based, but we don't really hear of enlightenment a lot. And and consciousness projection has to do with enlightenment, and tantric meditation all has to do with reaching enlightenment. So I think it really all starts to tie together when you think of it like that.
Hmm.
So yeah, I guess that's my big theory for the season is, Zaheer learns to astral project and does crazy things by like meditation. You also, do we see him meditating ever?
No, I don't think so.
We do, but not yet. Okay. So he's kind of the spiritual person, and I think it's interesting. I think it'd be a really cool way, as someone who's kind of studied this stuff a little bit, to like bring real life Buddhism more into the show through this kind of thing. If it turns out Zaheer practices tantric meditation, that'd be cool. And yeah, I don't know. That's a lot to process, especially if you haven't heard about this before. But anyway, that's just me trying to tie a lot of things we've seen this season together. If you want to learn more about this, look up Vajrayana on Wikipedia, which is tantric Buddhism.
I wish I studied this too.
Yeah, I took that class not kind of thinking about it, and then it's just so many Avatar parallels. Because the Avatar is very Tibetan-based, a lot of it.
What is this called?
What? The thing I'm talking about?
Just put a link in the description.
No, I don't want to do it. Vajrayana. Vajrayana. You can also just look up tantric Buddhism on Google. It should come to that.
I'll put a thread on the forum.
Yeah, we can do it on the thread. Anyway, any thoughts on that, or should we? I know, that's a lot to take in at once, but any thoughts on it?
Very grounded and light. It seems okay.
I wonder
going grounded for this show.
Jeff?
I wonder if it would be an interesting discussion contrasting the quality of mystery behind the Red Lotus and their motives and origin compared to Amon in season one. Like, how well they're managing this, you know, reveal stuff. Because I'm very, very curious on what's going on with, you know, this group and how they came to be. It seems like they've got some sort of... I don't know. Like, did they put themselves up to this task, and what is this task, and how are they going to kill the Avatar? Because if they kill the Avatar,
we don't know they want to kill the Avatar.
It hasn't been. Exactly. They think they're trying to kill the Avatar, but we haven't seen the villain's motive yet. Yeah.
Well, they want
to have an end.
I think they're going to try and control.
We do know that Zaheer wants to meet the Avatar in this episode.
Yeah, and they said before they want to end to the Avatar, but how do you end an Avatar that keeps regenerating?
They do say end to the Avatar and end to the White Lotus and the end to the Avatar. Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting, because I wonder if it comes back to that Rava stuff, because...
We almost saw the...
I mean, it's not that... I mean, you know, if these two seasons were ordered together, I mean, it would make sense that the Rava situation would play back into this, because that seems the only likely way, with the exception of killing the Avatar in the Avatar state, which may be the same exact thing as destroying Rava, but it seems like if you were to end the Avatar, that's how you would have to do it.
You have to separate them and then kill one of them.
I really hope we don't come back to Rava, but we could.
Rava. Kind of like we've talked about a political supreme being being bad. I mean, the Avatar is historically a spiritual sort of supreme knowledge point. They could just be against that sort of thing.
Just the concept of the Avatar, yeah.
The concept of an Avatar being the bridge between the worlds and not needing a bridge.
Yeah. I'm
seeing her as being something important.
I foresee their motives being interesting. I just don't know what they are yet.
That poem or whatever it was he read from that pendant was interesting, because it kind of, the first thing it made me think of was, again, back to what Guru Patik was saying about let go of the earthly attachment.
He says, let go your earthly tether, yeah.
Yeah, which is, you know, essentially, I assume to be the same thing, which is the first and I think the obvious assumption to make about it, but it's interesting.
I think it's interesting to look at Guru Patik, who also seems like a tantric master, by the way, as and he also looks Indian, so it kind of matches with that.
It
very much seems like he's supposed to be an Indian tantric master.
Now we're just being racist.
I didn't know it at the time, but like looking, because I hadn't studied it when Avatar, but looking back, it's obvious. It's interesting to look at him as approaching the Avatar state control from an airbending specific perspective. When Avatar heard, we kind of thought, oh, this is just this high-level guy who knows about the Avatar in general. But if we think of him as more of an airbending perspective, we can kind of see how we're trying to deal with the Avatar state through tantrism, which might be specific to airbending. It seems to be tied to airbending, these meditation, these crazy astral projection things, dealing with the chakras. It all seems very airbender.
It does. Yeah,
which is interesting because they did tell us we were looking at some point, I believe, more into airbending and about specific airbending techniques. Yes, kind of like
presumably the airbender technique is going to be this astral projection and something involving that. And a quick note, let go your earthly tether, enter the void empty and become wind. Sounds very much like reaching enlightenment to me. Another tie-in.
Become your element.
Enter the void. Let's not.
That just sounds bad.
That
sounds like the Nagatsune is going to come out and get anyway. Us.
We've spent a lot of time on this, but I think to me this is super interesting. I'm really excited to see where they go with it. Okay, abrupt change of topics. Toph is, well, it's not really abrupt. We mentioned Toph is seeking enlightenment. It should be noted that he says, Ai Wei says, no one's seen her in years. She used to frequently visit the city, but no one has seen her in years. So people are like,
there's no body.
See, oh, like people, oh, Toph's alive, everyone's saying. But she might be or she might not be. But it's ambiguous right now.
She's immortal. It's okay, the statues are Horcruxes.
Yeah, Sam says the statues are, Toph's statues are her Horcruxes, which is pretty funny.
Someone on Tumblr said that too.
That was Sam.
I
reblogged Sam's alternate account, which said, yes.
Oh, I didn't know she had an alternate account.
Yes, that's her alt account.
Tricky.
Anyway, thoughts on Toph possibly being alive?
Well, it's interesting that they say enlightenment because we just talked about how essentially this enlightenment situation is tied completely to airbending, which is the natural opposite of earthbending. And Toph is like the most
Toph doesn't seem like an enlightenment type person.
Well, that's the thing. She is like the most stereotypical, like if there was ever an earthbender, it was Toph. And she rebelled against a lot of stuff when she was teaching Aang, telling him that he has to approach things very matter-of-factly and very solidly, not meaning that pun.
Yes, but, you are.
Well, very bluntly. And now, I didn't mean that pun, and now she's going out to seek enlightenment. It's very interesting because she's doing essentially the opposite of what I would imagine her to be doing.
Yeah, me too. Maybe she's not seeking enlightenment. That was just her excuse. Maybe she gained some sort of spirituality in her old age.
I think she's seeking enlightenment.
Real quick, Avatar Legends on Tumblr. By the way, props for them to discovering this Red Lotus thing. I've actually grown pretty fond of their Tumblr account. I don't usually like other fan sites' accounts, but Avatar Legends, I think, does a good job. That image Brian put up before.
Wow, it's kind of rude to all the other Avatar sites.
I'm not big on these Korra age.
I don't like you guys.
Fan sites. Like, yeah, there's a lot of them.
Basically, only two or three left from. Only two.
As one of the original Avatar fan sites, I'm more sympathetic to Avatar age fans.
Get off my lawn, kid.
Exactly. Basically. Anyway, they just posted the image that Brian put up before the season started. Hashtag Red Lotus. Could that be the Red Lotus symbol? That thing we were trying to find the date in for the premiere.
I was like,
it's red and it kind of is lotusy. That could have been hinting.
It's a mandala. Am I wrong?
It was
mandala.
I'm
mandala.
If it's Rava or
a mandala. Rava, I don't know. I don't know if it's a mandala, but yeah.
Because it looks kind of like the same basic shape with the leaves.
Yeah.
It's interesting because our first. Well, wait a minute. That's really interesting to think about, though. We're talking about that logo thing, right?
Yeah, the logo.
Yes.
That transforms from white to red.
Yeah.
So when we first saw that, White Lotus, Ali and I were Lotus. Talking about it, we were like, oh, it goes from like Rava colors to like Batu covers, colors, freaky. But it's interesting then that it's, if you look at it, White Lotus, Red Lotus.
Yeah.
Is there a connection?
It could be either. It could be both with a connection. It's kind of...
Because that's the thing is we don't really know the prior to this stuff about the White Lotus.
Looking at it.
We know that it was kind of an organization to like keep peace and order, I suppose, but...
That is a lotus, though, right?
Well, yeah, but my point is there a connection between...
I don't know if it's
meant to be white and red and all that stuff, but is there a connection maybe to that more spiritual stuff?
It's an intricate design that somewhat resembles a lotus, I would say.
I'm postulating that under the assumption that it is a lotus.
Yes, I think it probably is, knowing what we know.
I'm actually looking at the animation where the Zaofu city closes up at night. Looks kind of like a white flower.
Ooh, yeah, it does look like a flower when it's closing. Yeah, I know that.
That was my first thought, was that they were flowers. Was that they were lotus petals?
Could this all be tied with the lotus? It would be so cool to see
dance with that flower thing.
What flower?
Yeah, that lotus flower.
Yeah, you didn't see that.
The dance routine. Yeah, I think it'd be really interesting to have a White Lotus centric
Rapunzel. All those flowers.
A White Lotus centric plot this season. I think that might be what we're getting. It looks like.
In that case, it would be Suyin's husband is secretly a White Lotus agent.
Because he designed it, but yeah, but Sue also probably had the plans coming up with him.
Sure.
I think they'd be in
cahoots. So the question is, which Lotus are they?
Are they red or white?
Red,
yeah,
red or white. Question.
It's maybe like one's red and one's white.
Brit, it's like the Targaryens, black dragon, red dragon.
I know, which one are they?
Which one?
Okay, quickly powering through, because we've had 90 minutes already. The end of the episode, I think everything's literally perfect to this episode, except for the last minute. I think the Lynn angst at the end is sacrificing quality dialogue and structure of episode for setting up future plot. Like, they're setting up the next episode.
I disagree.
What do you say about
it? I somewhat disagree.
I love it. Like,
You see her cry. When does Lynn cry?
I don't love the dialogue, Lynn says. Lynn says at one point, stop trying to fix my family and focus on fixing the world or something. I hate that line.
I thought that was a pretty good line.
I don't like that line.
Yeah, me too.
People don't talk like that.
What do you mean?
Oh, my God. Yes, they do.
I quote Nicolas Cage, but they think like that.
I don't know. I don't like that line. Anyway, I have a general point to make about I think that a lot of these really good episodes we've been seeing have been they're having problems focusing on a plot in this episode without randomly doing something else at the end. And it's less so in this episode because it's not Lynn stuff isn't random because we're doing it all episode, but we're kind of randomly going to somewhere else and maybe sacrificing some of the quality and integrity of the rest of the episode by in setting up future episodes
with quality.
No, and I have examples. Okay. So, A New Spiritual Age, the weakest point of that episode is the Unalaq capturing Janora and all the stuff with Unalaq, Janora Kor at the end, and it really ruins the episode, kind of.
How?
And that scene is not well done, the dialogue is stale, it's very moved through very fast, and what they're doing is they're going, and the second example is episode 2 of this season. We have to get to the Kai stuff at the end. We have to advance the plot. We have to get him onto the ship. And I think that's very clear that the weakest part of the episode within a largely comedic and slow-paced, funny episode. So we've seen examples of not even the third act, but like maybe the last eighth of an episode being dedicated to advancing the plot. And I think it's just a stark contrast from the rest of it. And I think they really should be doing less of that and focusing more on making complete stories in one episode.
That's what you like, Dylan. We've talked about this in the Avatar ranking episodes. You like a complete...
I think that's a little bit of a bias for me.
Sort of advance the plot.
I think the Lynn stuff at the end is pretty clearly I don't think it's bad, but I think it's the weakest part. Like, it's weaker than the rest.
I don't think it's bad.
No, I think it's fine. You'll see my rating, and you'll see that I don't think that's bad.
Like, I thought this was really good, like, sort of overall thing. This was, like, a good stopping point for her arc, which is almost singular in this episode.
Having seen next episode, I don't know if it's necessary. We can talk about that when we see it again next week.
Okay.
But I don't know if it's we need this at the end. Okay. And the last thing, Bopal is the ship of Bolan and Nopal. They're adorable. And we can't talk about that already. Okay, let's grade this episode and then move on quickly. We've still a lot to get to. Out of 10, same drill. Mel, you start.
I'm going to give it an 8. And I really did like the end, especially Lynn's part, even if you didn't. You know, it did suffer a little bit from lack of plot movement on the one end, but I think the introduction of the characters and the core of the story made up for that. So, solid 8.
Allie?
8.6. I mean, we kind of talked about it at the beginning. Well, it's better than 8.7. No. What? We talked about it at the beginning before we like really got into the episode. I mean, I didn't really think of it as that great, but really thinking about like how they introduced the characters, it just was done so well.
And
the fact that Mike was breathing. But yeah, no, that's 8.6.
Okay, Britt.
I would give it a solid 8. Maybe 8.5 if I rewatched it, but I just really like this episode. It has Soojin in it, and she is
probably one of my favorite characters so far.
Cool.
You're in it too.
Jeff.
Yeah, yeah, I'm in it. I gotta give myself an 8.
Love it. I'd give it an 8.5. I loved it a lot. And I like all the new characters they're bringing in. So,
yeah. There you go. 2 points before my grade. I think one, I think people delegitimize episodes like this because they're not plot heavy. Maybe, and I also think it's just I prefer this type of episode. This is like made for me, kind of. But I think a lot of people are like, oh, it just gets better from here. When maybe people on the crew mean it gets more plot heavy from here. So I think maybe sometimes we confuse that. What was my second point? I said I have 2 points, and then I just completely. My big debate with this episode is. Is this comparable to my top 15 episodes of Avatar or not?
Ooh,
that's really? My big debate. This is the first episode I've ever considered. I have a tier of 15 episodes of Avatar that are heads above the rest. And my big thing is, does it fit into that or not? And I don't know. Look for a Tumblr post this week on my
theories
horror
are
rankings.
So incomparable though.
It's so hard to compare. I agree.
Incomparable.
Anyway,
not uncomparable.
For me, this is a 9.75 out of 10. Nearly perfect.
Oh my god!
Nearly perfect.
That's too high.
It's my favorite episode of Korra. Like, I'm so big.
It's definitely not gonna see this.
We'll revisit again, but I'm super big on dialogue and the writing, and I think this is the best script of Korra pretty easily. I think Mike just did an incredible job. I'm in love with it. I don't know what else to say. Okay, we're going to take your voicemails, but first, for July Sydney on YouTube, on the comments of our live video podcast a few weeks ago, commented, since Zuko's back, how about the return of Hidden Zutara? So,
I'm so ashamed that comment 7 years ago in chat at 10 o'clock at night turned into...
turned into this. I think it's the favorite podcast segment among everyone.
I only have two.
Mel.
Which is disappointing.
Okay, first let's explain the concept of Inzutar.
Okay. Listeners. So, idea is, it's a satire on some of the ways that people who ship Zutara back in the day would go about finding their evidence or support of the ship being endgame.
Mm-hmm.
It's not meant to be taken seriously, even though Allie for a while thought I was being serious.
You know what? And how many people are.
Great. And you know, it's fun. Not trying to offend anyone.
Yeah, so I think two points. One, if you weren't in the Avatar fandom during the Shipping Wars craze, you won't understand how crazy Zutarians and Kadanks were. Don't be offended, Zutarians. I think this is maybe more of a parody of zealous shipping in general.
Yeah.
You know, than specific Zutara.
We could go deep about this and say that that's fine.
Okay, but anyway.
I'll read them and you can respond. When Katara first talked to Korra in the pilot episode, claiming her brother and most of her friends were gone, she was clearly full of crap because both Toph and Zuko are alive. It is clear that she was trying to hide her affair with Zuko, therefore they will be together in their old age.
She was trying to hide what?
Her secret affair.
Her secret affair with Zuko. I think that makes sense. That's
yeah.
legit.
No, yeah.
She did say most of my friends are gone, and we're slowly learning that everyone is still alive.
Everyone's still alive.
She literally had two and friends.
She had
she
two
literally
friends.
Had two friends, and they're both alive. So she was.
So I can see alive. No other reason for lies.
Yeah.
Than this. And then
okay.
The other one.
Yes.
This is not really episode specific, but we have yet to get confirmation on the identity of the mother of Zuko's children. This is clearly because he's concealing the identity of Katara as the child's secret mother. Therefore, Katara was just waiting for Aang to die to reveal her true
Whoa.
Feelings.
Whoa.
Whoa. Alrighty then.
Everyone's like, is Zuko's wife Suki or is it Mei? But no, it's Katara. That's the actual answer. Katara. Yeah.
You've all been duped.
I think those were pretty good. Good job, Mel. Someone.
Why are you pregnant, Katara? Hush, I'm just kidding.
Hush.
I'm just kidding.
Gizmo on the forums kind of has a hidden Zutara, which is, it's a crazy crack theory about Aang being Lin's father. Or Suyin's father. You can go read
Let's explore that.
You can go read that on the DF forums.
They're both pale as hell.
Donwufeng.net/forums. So go.
Suyin's father. I mean, his granddaughter's an airbender, so.
But no, okay. that would make Lin's in not a great situation.
Okay, yeah. two voicemails. Oh, God. Two voicemails this week. Let's start with Tato. And give me a second to load it up.
Hi
guys, it's Tato. I have to say, as a native Spanish-speaking person, and having seen these episodes when they were leaked in Spanish, the Spanish version is pretty spot on, almost like 95% accurate of the English version. And I really liked these episodes, they were pretty great. Reminded me of Last Airbender. I liked Bolin and Opal, and seeing Lin so salty was kind of great. I'm sorry if that makes me a horrible person, but I like seeing character develop. Bye.
So yeah, thanks Tato for your
Potato.
No, that's not nice.
Call him names.
I agree. I agree that the Spanish dub was really good. Actually, like
yeah, the Spanish dub was very good.
It's super well made.
Senor Saka
in English.
Senor.
Senor Saka.
No, Jefe Saka. Senor Zuko.
Jefe Saka.
Senor. That's what it was. I think Mike and Brian would agree with you on the Ling angst. They seem to, listening to commentaries, they just want to make everyone upset. And
no, I agree with him. I really, really liked that. I thought that was great, especially considering we didn't get like any Lin in the previous season, and now we're just getting like
so much Lin.
Blasts of Lin emotion.
Yeah, I'm loving great. Lin. Great to see it continue next week. Okay, second voicemail is from DF regular Toon Gal.
Yay!
That chick.
Hello, this is Toon Gal. I've already shared my opinions on this on the forums, but I wanted an excuse to get my voice on the podcast again. So, what I want to ask you is this. How do you think the Metal Clan compares to the Civil Wars episodes of Book 2 in terms of the sibling relationships and family issues and stuff like that? Thank you.
I don't even remember those episodes.
Well,
so I think you mean the entire conflict of Book 2?
So I think this is a good this is a good talking point, because in Book 2 we get the Cat Aang Babies whole their whole conflict, and
that happens. Okay.
Right.
Generally
right.
It's like, oh, maybe this isn't so well done. Okay, so Toon Gal actually comments this on the forums. I'll read a little bit of it. I feel like the explanation for Lin's estrangement was quite realistic and made more sense than what was going on with the Cat Aang children. It was just natural sibling rivalry and competing for parental attention. Although I somehow feel that there was something more to it, some big event that may have caused Lin to permanently cut herself off, hint in next episode. Toph as a parent was given believable in-character flaws, and parentheses going laissez-faire route with her parenting and how she was raised, that's so her. I like the implications of Lin and Suyin having different fathers neither of them knew. But needless to say, having something like that is rare in children's programming. I feel like this episode did family drama right. It went deep emotional territory, but it wasn't constant negativity like the two Civil Wars two-parter.
Yeah, I thought it was really real. You can get, but with the way it was done, because you've got this younger sibling who kind of got away with a bunch of stuff, and even older, like, really didn't recognize that, yeah, she was getting away with a lot of stuff, and you've got this older sibling who is struggling not only to please Toph, but also keep the younger one in line and make her see, you know, like, you can't just run around and do whatever you want. It's very much sort of that Aaron Spare mentality, obviously in a much smaller and more private family dynamic, where basically you just got the older one compensating for everything and the younger one just going crazy because they don't have any expectations.
Yeah, Lin definitely has oldest child syndrome, and it just manifested in a very unconstructive way.
I think it was well handled in a general sense in this episode, and I think I think it just gets better next episode. That's basically all I have to say with it. Thanks for sending in voicemails, guys. You can leave voicemails. Starting next week, we are recording an hour to an hour and a half after the episodes end on Friday night, so you have to get the voicemails in very fast. dongwufeng.net/podcast, and the thing pops up on the right. Click that, record your voicemail, send it to us, we'll play it. Thanks to all of you for sending it in. Last thoughts on either of these episodes before we wrap things up? I think we covered it. Good.
Glad this season is so good so far. Like, yes, I'm really happy.
Oh yeah, it's so a general point.
It's so good.
This is such a joy to watch this season. There's no pressure. It's and it's just been quality after quality episode, and I'm just in love with Quora right now. It's so good.
Oh wow.
And I kind of love that we're like have this constant positivity on the podcast. Same. instead of last season.
I don't
season.
Like being angry. Oh my god!
I know.
Oh my god! Yes.
Oh my god!
It's more fun to talk about the show when it's really good.
Exactly.
I have friends who like have dropped off watching Korra after season one. I'm like,
me too, Jeff.
I don't feel same. Like watching season two. And I'm like, but it gets so good now.
I know. Same. I have a few who dropped after the beginning of book two after it was. Questionable, and I'm like, come on, you have to see Beginnings now, you have to see how good book three is.
That happened to me, but then I made them watch the rest, and now they're in book three, and they're messaging me like, oh my god, I'm
that's
so glad
good. I need to do that, yeah. All right, anyway.
All my friends still watch it.
Good, thumbs up.
So I guess I win.
You're better than us. Okay, anyway, I've been your main host, Dylan, co-host.
Oh,
did we talk about
sponsorship or whatever?
I like the
We don't need to do the mid tag, I don't care.
I like the unfinished sentence you've got down there.
Yeah, I don't know.
Bill Brzezinka and Eugene.
Oh, I just noticed that.
Okay, no, that was notes to myself, basically. Cool. Co-hosts have been Jeff, Allie, Mel, Britt.
I'm always last.
You were last on the.
Was last in the opening.
I give an order and I follow that the rest of the podcast, but this time I was just looking at who appeared on Skype left to right. Anyway, tech directors AJ, Kevin, Jeff. Music credits to Yoshida Brothers, Jeremy Zuckerman, Luke Tripp. Logo and banner by Kevin. Dong Feng Zone by Jake. Thank you, Gareth, to donating once again to the podcast this week.
G Money.
Yeah, woohoo!
Forget the money. Gareth's pretty great. If you enjoyed today's podcast, consider donating to From the Spirit World. All donations go directly to supporting our podcast. You can donate by going to dongwufeng.net/podcast and clicking donate at the top. Donator contributors to the podcast, Gareth, Sierra, Nick, Devin, and Lexi. A.K.A. G-Money, Serumist, Nick at Night, Rudy and Tabuti. Thank you all for donating. Also, on the podcast page, you can find our bios, which have been recently enhanced with Teresa's artwork of us as Nations of Our Choice, or some of us. She's going down the list. And it's really cool. Click on podcast bios at the top of Tom
Fing. I
really
don't
want
to do it now that she's doing it. Do I have to do it?
Soon? Yes.
I must say, I do look pretty suave.
You look pretty great, yeah.
Sam is the best, though.
Suave. I think like Sam,
think
Mel, and Jeff are the best.
Taller.
Sam, Mel, and Jeff are
really
good.
Mel looks like she could conquer some...
Mel's is super accurate for her personality.
I just look not my... You know what, never mind.
Anyway, email us, dylan@dongwufeng.net, Tumblr, dongwufeng.tumblr.com, Twitter @dongwufeng, one word.
One word.
And yeah, I think that's it. Thanks so much, and post on the DF forums. Leave your feedback. We only got Toongal's feedback on the last podcast. I really like hearing your thoughts on the podcast thread. dongwufeng.net/podcast, and you click on the From the Spirit World forum, and you click on the podcast episode number, and it really helps me to. I see that you guys are listening through the hit counter, but it really helps me to hear any sort of feedback, even if it's just like, "Good job, guys!" Like, that'd be good.
I'm gonna leave you a voicemail.
If a co-host is not on in a specific podcast, the voicemail is perfectly valid.
Oh my god, I'm totally doing that.
If and it should be noted,
that's what I'll do when I'm in Japan.
We have a crew of eight co-hosts this week. We're gonna have to basically be rotating, kind of four and four. So I'm sorry if we can't get your favorite on each week, but it's weird. I didn't expect everyone to be able to make podcast recordings, but seemingly
tell
they
us
can.
Your favorite.
Anyway,
you should definitely
don't
tell.
Do that.
Don't do that.
Your favorite.
Sam's obviously the favorite.
Sam's the favorite of everybody's, but Sam is unfortunately working this week and next week, so no Sam next week. I apologize. Sorry for no Sam. Anyway, what do you guys want to end on?
Zahir.
No, what?
Zahir.
No.
Zahir.
No.
Zafar. Zafar, wherever you are.
Did we have anything else, though?
Beautiful.
We could do.
I don't think there was anything else.
Sister Zahir.
I know,
Zahir.
But...
Zahir.
Any alternative? I like coming up with two.
Become wind. How about that one? Enter the void. Become wind.
Yeah,
no,
but
that's
not funny.
Serious.
That's too serious. Yeah.
We are not a serious podcast.
No.
Take ourselves very seriously.
I guess Zahir is fine.
Opal.
Oh, because
no,
Brit. Yeah.
Zahir.
Yes, definitely.
Zahir.
Anyway, I guess let's go with Zahir. You can say other characters if you want. I don't know.
Aang.
No, not Aang. And he's not in the episode. Anyway. Thanks for listening, guys. One, no, not, oh my god. Thanks for listening, guys. One, two, three, Zahir.
Katara.
Katara, great.
Zahir.
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 Zahir.